What have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 122. This week's show is all about the bounty hunter known as IG-88. As always, I am Mikey B, and I'm joined by my co-host, Caitlin. What's up, Caitlin?
Hello. Not too much, you?
Not too much. Cold. It is getting cold here. I know you live in Hoth, so it's been like cold all year round, but you know.
Yeah.
I have a long sleeve shirt on and a sweater on right now, so it's to me it's kind of cold, but you know, it's all right.
Okay there.
Okay. You're like, as you laugh, you're like, ha, ha, ha.
That's yeah, all you I'm got. Judging two a little. Layers.
You're like, you only got two. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, get a hold of us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook page. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net, or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, or any audiobook for that matter. You know what, Caitlin? Have you listened to any audiobooks lately?
A few.
A few? All Star Wars or not Star Wars?
Actually, it's been a while since Star Wars, but I have listened to star-related ones. Does that count? Space ones?
Maybe. Sure. Yeah. Why not? What have you listened to?
Oh, what was the last one I listened to? Artemis.
You know what? I actually was going to say, I listened to Artemis, too. No. I listened to Armada. Artemis was okay. On my list. I'm like, do I want to pay for it or not? Or use my credit on it? So Artemis is on my list. Was it good?
Yes.
Then I might have to
actually,
get that.
I forget the name of the actress, but there's a well-known actress who actually voices the character. It's really good.
That's cool. I actually got into, I had already read the book, and I saw the movie after this holiday season, because I had time to watch some movies. I listened to the audiobook of Ready Player One, and it was read by none other than Will Wheaton, of all people.
Yep.
And it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. Listening to Ready Player One by Will Wheaton was pretty awesome. So much so that he also reads the other novel written by the same author, which is Armada, and I just finished that, and I was like, okay, like I'm a fan of Will Wheaton, like reading, so I kind of wanted to see what else he read, but Artemis keeps popping up as one of the books for me to recommends to me, since we've literally been on a Star Wars drought, if you will, for books, but we have some coming up in the next 2 months, starting in March. We have a slew of books starting to be released, so I think I'm going to save my credits up for those, but I might get Artemis. Definitely check it out at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. We've also launched our Patreon. Check it out at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Some perks are Discord chat. Join us as we record in the recording studio and our chat as we talk, and I post pictures in there. Movie nights and After Dark episodes. If you can't afford to support us via Patreon, that's okay. We do have merchandise available for sale. You can rock a Resistance Radio t-shirt or get a button pack and put that on your strap for your purse, your bag. I put mine in my car. Go figure. It's all over the place on the little visor, but don't tell me if that's something you should do or not. But they are available on our website, resistanceradio.net. Guys, it is time for the news. And this week, I'll be honest with you, it was kind of, we didn't have that much news, Caitlin. Was that something you expected to kind of be kind of light on news, or were you expecting a bunch of Star Wars stuff to come up?
No, I guess not, but like we spent most of last week's episode talking about news, so I mean, I don't think it hurts that we have a more news light episode this time around.
Yeah, I kind of figured it wouldn't be, because you know, last episode was kind of all the news for like a month and what was coming out that week, just because you know, it has been a slow Star Wars season, it has been right now, just because. After Solo in May, we kind of got down, like kind of the stuff that followed up Solo, and then that was kind of it, other than the Blu-ray DVD release. And now we're finally in 2019, where we're going to go ahead and see a little bit more. So, real quick, just to kind of move on to the first bit of news, Star Wars Episode 9. So it looks like Star Wars Episode 9 is going to wrap filming soon. The reason for this, and this is not something that is officially out there, so it's not really a rumor, but there is some things to kind of talk about it. But Star Wars Episode 9 looks to be wrapping because a crew member posted a picture on Instagram, having a thank you note from Kathleen Kennedy, J.J. Abrams, Gillum Green, and Michelle Rejean, basically saying, thank you for your hard work on filming Episode 9. Specifically, it says, dear cast and crew of Episode 9, though it's kind of hard to see, I'm trying to read it. There are no words to properly express our gratitude and amazement. Your work has been next level spectacular, and you've done it all with kindness and respect. There are no words, but there are jackets. XO, JJ, Kathy, Michelle, and Callum. All those there. And of course, there's jackets and shirts for Episode 9. That say Episode 9 have Bad Robot on it and Lucasfilm logo. So it's pretty cool. Like, this was from a model maker who worked at Pinewood. So that doesn't mean that they're done with Episode 9. It just means that the production side kind of comes to a wrap. It's kind of a tradition if you work on a film or anything that at the end there's usually a gift or something provided to you. Usually a wrap party when everything wraps up. But it looks like the model maker has at least gotten his end of production gift with that really nice note. What do you think?
I mean, it's nice. And I guess, like, I don't know, like, you would be able to speak better to this, but, like, in terms of filming and wrapping up in and knowing that the film's supposed to come out later, I say later this year, it's almost practically a year away, but, like, 11 months down the road. Whether that fits that time frame or not.
Yeah, it does. You know, here's the thing is, when you finish wrapping a film, like filming it, you're still a ways away from being done.
Well, obviously, yeah, exactly.
We have a year's worth. But it means all the principal photography, all the big, you know, when you look at like a story, especially in production, when you look at like all your principal photography being wrapped, now it's time that JJ is going to leave London. He's going to come back to the States and he's going to go ahead and work in an edit studio, you know, with his editor. And they're going to start piecing the story together and they're going to make a list of anything that they're going to need the second AD, second director, to go in and shoot like these pickup shots, which will probably happen in about 3 to 4 months. While that's happening, all the CGI and effects will be done with each sequence that's done. So just to give you perspective, without getting too nerdy into like how editors organize, because every editor is a little different, but obviously each scene has its, you know, scene, take, act, and stuff like that. So each scene is done, you know, in their own timeline and stuff like that. And they work through it piece by piece and they string it out very rough to get an idea of how the movie's going to flow to make sure it's kind of right. And as they do a scene and it's like, this is perfect, that's great, everything's done, that's sent over to effects. Anything that needs to be done, like effects will go through it. They'll go ahead and add CGI characters into it. If BB-8's in there, they'll go ahead and remove like the, you know, the practical stuff from it and composite. And then that'll get put back in. So as you start to string it out. So it is still a ways away from being done. But it does mean that the majority of the film is done shooting. And they just have like kind of pickup shots and reshoots that need to happen. Just to kind of put in perspective with like Rogue One, they had finished it and, you know, you had Gareth Edwards in the editing bay and they went out and did some B-roll shots or pickup shots to complete the ending sequence. And they didn't know that the ending sequence needed to be changed because when they had storylined, it was two different buildings where they got the, you know, the data tape, and then they had to go up to, you know, and put that, you know, and just, you know, transmit the signal. But it just stretched that sequence out too long at the end. It just felt slow paced. So by being reshooting it and making it all one thing, it kind of sped things up. So, and that's kind of what happens with it. So it's not, it's just a good sign that the movie's moving on how you would expect it to move on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, and that they're giving themselves, like, as you said, like, if you have to, like, reshoot and stuff, you're taking away time to do the editing or any special effects, et cetera, et cetera. So, if they're giving themselves enough time to do that,
Yeah, and
then the quality will be there.
And I think that's something they're also kind of not worried about, but they're really right on track, because we saw this with Solo. You know, mm-hmm. we saw with the reshoots that Ron Howard did, you know, essentially it said that he reshot almost the entire film. Some characters that, you know, actors that were in the film who had shot, and then when they reshot everything, they couldn't make it back for the amount of extensive reshoots. So they recast characters. Literally, and some characters were supposed to be alien characters, CGI characters, weren't. They were humanoid because they didn't have time to be able to do the CGI, and that's a decision they had to make because of the amount of reshoots they had to do. Whereas, obviously, there's no director change in this film, but it does give them plenty of time to be able to get everything kind of set up and finish the way they want. So, I'm pretty sure we'll see episode 9 get an official announcement that it's wrapped. We'll get it. Probably they'll announce it at the same time they announce the title. And I wouldn't be surprised if we talked about, you know, if we get that at the end of this week, early next week, and it's something we're talking about next week, which I'd be really happy about. That gives us a whole thing to speculate. And hopefully we'll have more people on the show and we can talk about that. Anything else about episode 9 wrapping up?
Nope.
No? All right. So, the next bit of news is actually something I thought was really fun. There is a company called Kano. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. But Kano is teaming up with Disney for new Star Wars-themed coding products. Kano, for me, like I know Kano because they actually are the ones who made the Harry Potter wand that's available. And you can get that and you can code with things like Apple's Swift Playgrounds and stuff like that, but they're going to make some really cool products that looks like you'll be able to code and just learn how to code and play with Star Wars stuff. What do you think about this?
Sounds fun to me. The only coding experience I had was like grade 10 high school, so I can't comment on that too much, but I mean, to be honest, anytime you want to add like Harry Potter or Star Wars to something, it's going to make it more fun.
Yeah, it really is. So Kano is the company known for its range of products designed to teach coding to kids and adults alike through innovative coding projects. So they announced today that they're working with Disney for Star Wars. One of my favorite things is, just to give you perspective, because obviously I use a lot of Apple stuff, the Harry Potter wand is actually really cool from Kano because you can program it for different motions to perform different tasks, and it can tie into like the stuff you set up. So if you have smart home stuff set up, like Hue lights, if you will, like which is the smart lights that you can control, you can wave the wand. You don't have to say anything, or you can say something like Lumos Maxima, and the lights will turn on. You can wave them a different way, and the lights can change color, which is really cool. And all through the app, it kind of teaches you how to, the process of coding, kind of like how different things do different things. And it is done through block coding. So I'm kind of excited to see what toys, what things that they develop Star Wars themed-wise that will teach kids how to code. Because I think coding is probably one of the more important new skills that younger kids we'll need to pick up going forward, because it's built into so many of the things that we do nowadays. Any other thoughts, Caitlin?
Nope.
All right. Next but bit of news.
I have thoughts on this, though.
On this next bit here, right?
Yeah.
So, we have more pictures and info of Rise of the Resistance, as well as Galaxy's Edge. One of my favorite pictures that have popped up, and I swear I had seen this before, and I think maybe it's actually at Disneyland, but I'm glad that it's up here. This comes from Attractions Magazine, talking about Rise of the Resistance. But they've given us a lot more information of it, specifically as you're on the ride. We've talked about the kind of the 8-person vehicle that you're going through. And I said, I think you're going to go through by the AT-ATs because they're inside. It does show you literally riding in between the legs of two AT-ATs on the Rise of the Resistance ride, with the AT-ATs, you know, shooting laser blasts at you. I'm super excited about this. Like, I think it looks epic. What do you think, Caitlin?
Yeah, I'm excited.
It looks really, like, honestly, I think as much as I love the movie coming out, I'm really excited for the movie to come out. I am really excited for this because I feel like it's just going to be, it's a completely new experience. And I think it's something that we're just going to have so much fun with. I will say that all the footage and scenes that we see on this that have come out all come from the Galaxy's Edge behind the scenes trailer that was released not too long ago. So, and I'm going to post that on our website so everyone can see. But it's really cool to take a look. Like, if you are a fan of just theme parks in general, the new stuff just looks absolutely amazing. And the ride for, we also got some additional stuff for the Millennium Falcon ride, which I will tell you, just like seeing the people like being shaken around, it reminds me of Star Tours a little bit, but you're in that iconic cockpit. So that makes me really, really excited. Like I'm so excited for this. Like I'm yeah, it's this year. Like it's all happening this year, Caitlin. I'm so like right now I'm like giddy. I love this.
And this is the thing. I'm not a ride person. But I'm excited.
Well, I'm glad you're excited for it, because we're all going to have to go to the theme park and do like a live podcast or something right as we ride each ride. It's going to be fun. But definitely check it out. I'll post the links on our website. Rise of the Resistance is coming to Disneyland in June-ish, summer. Again, people are saying it's supposed to be June 22nd and late fall to Walt Disney World in Florida. If you're going, tweet at us at Our Radio Podcast and let us know what you're most excited for at these new theme parks. And when you're going, maybe one of us will be there with you. Next bit of news, Star Wars Resistance, the second half of season one will begin this week, or has begun this week, on Sunday, on the 13th. We did talk about the trailer last week, but I think it's time to talk about the trailer and that the show is beginning. What are your thoughts on, I know we had a whole episode on Star Wars Resistance, and we kind of said, I think I said I'm going to keep with it, and hopefully it gets better. I think it's gotten better, but what do you think, Caitlin?
Well, this is the slight problem. I don't have access to it, so I've only seen, like, the first few episodes, and I haven't been able to watch any since. My opinion was pretty much the same as yours, and that it was good, but like it hadn't like, yeah, we had like in the like 4 20-minute episodes, like you don't build that like connection or attachment to the characters quite yet. But just watching like this other trailer, it has me excited, and it makes me want to watch and catch up.
It really does. I'll be honest with you. This trailer, and I don't think we need to go break down the trailer step by step. I don't think this is, it's not a spotlight topic or anything, but I think it's just something to let people know. I was definitely kind of like, okay, I'm going to watch Resistance because it's Star Wars. Like, I'm just going to do it. That's who I am. The trailer gave me chills. And I literally had to watch the trailer like 3 to 4 times. And it makes me kind of question to figure out exactly where Resistance fits in. I almost feel like it fits in right before Force Awakens. Like, I feel like it really was placed, like, timeline right before Force Awakens, and the end of the season's going to tie into a little bit of where the end of The Last Jedi did, and then the next season will kind of explain some stuff that's in between The Last Jedi and Episode 9. I have this feeling like that's where they're actually aiming for. The reason why is if you watch the trailer, you see Hux's speech right before he fires Starkiller Base to destroy the Hosnian Prime System, which ends the Republic. So it really, like, the show has clearly taken a dramatic turn. It's very different than what the first 4 or 5 episodes are that we talked about. And it makes me feel like this is kind of the same MO that we saw with like Rebels and even Clone Wars, where it started off like, oh, it's a nice kid show, and the kids, you know, find fun with the different characters, you get to know them, but then it's like something happens, you're just like, all right, this show is actually really, really good. So I'm excited for it. I don't know. And I will say, I think you said the same thing. Like, I feel like you're excited for it. But yeah, it really is one of those things where I feel like the timeline on this is going to be sped up a little bit more. So that way it ties us right into what's currently being launched by Disney and Star Wars. Do you agree with me on that, or?
I would, like, I haven't watched the rest of the first season, but, like, it'd be kind of nice if it kind of worked that way. Kind of like there's been other shows that have had, like, the TV verse and the movie verse, and they've managed to make it, work so that although you don't really see the TV show affect the movie verse, you have seen where the movie verse has affected what happens in the TV show. So it'd be kind of cool if they could play it that way.
That actually makes sense, because you have things like, what was I going to say? You have things like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. tied into Captain America and those types of things, especially the second Captain America. And that's all Disney. And we do have things like Star Wars Rebels. We saw the ghost in Rogue One. So we know that the stuff from the TV shows have made it to the movies in a limited way. I wouldn't be surprised if this is just one of the many outlets Disney is using to help prepare people for the episode 9. And this was something that just took a while to get off the ground, and they've probably been planning this for a long time. But I kid you not, it ties in so well to it. And there's something at the end of the trailer. Again, I don't want to go scene by scene. I'm trying to find it so I can get the exact verbiage of it. But there's a call for help from Princess Leia, or General Leia. And it makes me feel like... And Kaz says something along the lines of, "We're the resistance now." If you remember at the end of The Last Jedi... She said, mm-hmm. use my homing beacon, or use my, you know, my ID signal so everyone knows. And I have a feeling this just shows you how big this is going to show how big the First Order is, that they're here on Colossus Station, and then they're also taking out, you know, the resistance as we knew it in the movies. I feel like this is like parallel, like throughout the season, that you'll see what's happening at the end of Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. And this is like Kaz and them are hearing the call, and these are people that literally may make the jump into The Last Jedi or not. Just because, like, I feel like these are people who are going to be part of the resistance after what happened in The Last Jedi. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm really excited for it. If you haven't, you know what? I'm actually going to post the trailer, the mid-season trailer, on our website so you can check it out. At resistanceradio.net, if you haven't seen it. It is definitely worth a watch, and it might be something where you're like, okay, it's time to go ahead and get into Star Wars Resistance. If you are interested in Star Wars Resistance, I'll even put a link at the bottom of that trailer, so you can click through, get it through iTunes or Amazon. Anytime you purchase something like that, it'll help support Resistance Radio. But guess what? It is time for our spotlight topic, and I'm really excited for this spotlight topic. As I was thinking about it, I was talking to former co-host Eric Skull. I guess not former. He only can make it when he has time. He's a busy guy. He also does three other podcasts. So, you know, Eric's kind of busy. But mm-hmm. I was talking to him about IG-88. And Caitlin, remind me, did you ever play Star Wars Shadows of the Empire for Nintendo 64?
Nope.
And this is why I wanted Eric to be on the show. Because when I was probably like 10 years old.
Back in the day.
The Nintendo 64 was out, and there was this amazing Star Wars game called Shadows of the Empire. It was on sale not too long ago. I think we talked about it on the show for like $3. But there's a boss in there called IG-88, and if you didn't read any of the EU, you probably know IG-88 is one of the bounty hunters that were hired by Darth Vader in Empire Strikes Back. He's the robot bounty hunter to track down the Millennium Falcon, capture Han Solo. No disintegrations is what Vader says to him. But IG-80 was such a pain to kill in the game, and I'm so glad I'm talking about him, because it's really funny. As I was pulling up notes for IG-88, I feel like I could have actually pulled up a lot more notes, but I think we have enough conversation here for it. I realized they've really pulled a lot of IG-88 stuff because he's such a good character. He's going to show up in The Mandalorian, the new streaming series. You know, so we've talked about that. But he's also been in a lot of different things. Some of the new comics that we've talked about. And he's also been in Forces of Destiny to tie into some of the other characters that we know. But let's talk a little about IG-88. Well, first of all, before we get into it, Caitlin, what are your thoughts of IG-88? Just in general, like, do you like him as a character? Do you think you're like, he's one of those minor characters like Watto in the background, but he's important to know? Anything that, you know, stands out?
I'm sad to say not really. I haven't had much experience with IG-88, so, like, all I have are, like, these little bits and pieces here and there. So, like, I mean, it wouldn't hurt if, like, in, like, The Mandalorian and if any other shows or Forces of Destiny, they want to sprinkle them in there, by all means. But, yeah, like, because, like, this is the thing. We didn't, like, growing up, my household did not have, like, gaming consoles. So we never had access to the games or knew what was happening in them because for the internet, for the most part, was in infant stages. Yes, I'm that old. So I don't have that background that like you and Eric would have.
Okay, that's fine. I get that. And here, you know, I will tell you this. One of my fondest memories of IG-88 comes from the 1996 book. So think back to 1996. There was, yeah, right? There was a book released. Now, this is now EU. It's officially Legends. But there was a book called Tales of the Bounty Hunters. And it was all, there was a couple different series of these Tales books. Tales from Jabba's Palace, Tales from Mos Eisley. Like, there was all, you know, Evan from JotoCast remember this. I think we've even talked about these on the show at some point. But these extended, the extended universe, the EU, the Legends books, these all shined a light on the different things. And Tales of the Bounty Hunters, one of the stories was IG-88. And the nice part is, they essentially, for canon purposes, IG-88's origins are very similar to what was in the canon story. Real quick, just to kind of give you a background, IG-88 is a assassin droid. We've seen assassin droids in everything from the Clone Wars series, you know, in Rebels. We've seen, you know, assassin droids pop up. But IG-88 is a unique droid. He's got a unique head. He's really blocky. Like, his body is an exoskeleton, kind of like something like Terminator. But he's really blocky, and you would think he's not very deadly. But the way he's portrayed and the way he's written, he's, like, really, really deadly. In fact, so much so that he becomes the chief rival, the arch nemesis of Boba Fett. Like, those two are, like, the two top bounty hunters in the galaxy. And obviously, the Legend story has IG-88 has kind of an edge over Boba Fett for a couple reasons, and I'll talk a little bit about that. But I do want to talk about his origins, his official canon origins. So IG-88 is an assassin droid who was made in secret by Holowan Laboratories. And he personally became sentient and realized his skill and desire to kill the moment he was first activated. He went rogue, and from that moment on, became one of the most feared bounty hunters in the galaxy. So pretty basic is what the origins for IG-88 are. I will tell you, in the book, and Caitlin, you might be able to tell me what you think of this, because it sounds like this might be the first time you're hearing this origin story. But in the extended universe and Legends, IG-88 was very similar. He was first turned on, he went rogue, and he killed his creators. But he was one of many assassin droids. In fact, he's also known as IG-88B. And basically, there was, I think, 6 or 7 assassin droids. IG-88 A, B, C, D, E. And I think that was it. Maybe F was the last one. Maybe all the way up to G. I'm not 100% sure. It's been a while since I've read that. I think 96. But that was what was interesting. So IG-88 was actually one of many. And the benefit he had was he was able to be in more than one place at once, because there were, he activated all these other droids and they were all IG-88. And the ship he had, because he was a droid and he didn't need life support, he put bigger rockets on it so it could be even faster than any other ship out there, because he took out the life support system. So it was very similar origin story, but like it was, everything was really thought out to why, you know, his ship was designed this way. He was able to become a really capable hunter because no one could tell the difference between him and his brethren, if you will, because they were all the same droid that were made, and they killed their maker, so no one really knew where they came from. But that's kind of the origins that was in the legends. And the truth, the what do you call it, canon origins are very similar. They just don't go into as much detail, because I'm wondering if they're going to save for some of that for The Mandalorian or some other outlet that they may go into when they talk about him. So what do you think about his origins, Caitlin?
It kind of reminds me of, I think it was the Last Shot book that came out last year by Daniel Jose Older.
Mm-hmm.
With Han Solo and Lando, and they had like these killer robots. Not robots, but yeah, that's what it made, like when you're telling me this like origin story, that's where my mind went. Because like in that, like the robot, like these like assassin droids had red eyes, and that's what he had. Like he has these red lights on his face, which I'm assuming are like his visual sensors.
That's exactly it. You know, he's IG-88 is a feared assassin droid, because when you look at him, he's got like these things protruding from the side of his head and the back of his head. It's because his optical sensors, if you will, he sees 360 degrees at all times. Like he can never sneak up behind him. He is super scary in that sense, if that makes sense. But yeah, IG-88 is just an interesting character because, like I said, most people know him. He's one of those droids. He's one of the bounty hunters that are on the Executor in Empire Strikes Back, that Vader calls on to track down the Millennium Falcon. Obviously, Boba Fett is the one who caught, you know, them at Cloud City. But tying into like what IG-88 has done since then, and tied into characters that we do know, it's interesting. We have two episodes of Forces of Destiny that revolve around, well, I guess they don't revolve around IG-88, but he's a supporting character in them. The first one, and I think we talked about it, but we just made a mention to him, was Triple Cross. Yeah, so episode Triple Cross, The Forces of Destiny, is where IG-88 was hired to capture the Crimson Dawn lieutenant, none other than Kira, which we know from Solo. This time he teamed up with someone from both Clone Wars and Rebels, Hondo Inaka. What'd you think of this episode, Triple Cross? Because I know you watched this before going into the show, Caitlin.
Yeah, and like I think that's, it doesn't help, or it kind of goes against the message that he's deadly, because in both Forces of Destiny episodes we talk about, he ends up being foiled quite easily. But in this one, it was kind of interesting to watch him play off not just Kira but Hondo, and just knowing how Hondo is and the different, like what I would imagine their different personalities would be, and just watch, like I could see them doing like I could see it being like a buddy cop but not cop like comedy thing with just Hondo and
IG-88 being like a buddy bounty hunter, you know, scoundrel type.
Like they both have to like go after the same person, either whether it's competitively or like the lead up of them trying to work together to get Kira set up in that trap. I just think it'd be amusing.
Yeah, I will say, for those who haven't seen Triple Cross, basically what happens, IG-88 is teamed up with Hondo to click the bounty on the Kira's head, because she's a Crimson Dawn lieutenant. After they track down Kira, IG-88 and Hondo manage to apprehend Kira. They corner her and trap her. But Kira, being smooth-talking and smart, you know, which we learned in the Solo film, she convinced Hondo that a droid like IG-88 would be actually very expensive, would be worth it, and IG-88 should click the bounty on Hondo instead of the bounty on her. So as he attacks Hondo, as IG-88 decides to attack Hondo because Hondo is worth more than Kira, IG-88 is stunned by both Kira and Hondo and put in binders. And afterwards, Kira tricks and apprehends Hondo. So Kira is able to get away in the end. So yeah, all right. IG-88 was led away by Kira so she can collect the bounty on his head in the end. So it was a kind of a triple cross where Hondo and IG-88 were together. Kira tricks them. They apprehend Hondo. Then they apprehend IG-88, and she takes him in for the money. Does that make sense? Did I explain that right, Caitlin?
Yeah. So essentially, like, they're both trying to team up to get the bounty on her. She tricks them and is going to claim the bounty on both of them, because Hondo made the mistake of boasting that his bounty was worth more than both Kira's and IG-88's bounty. So,
you know,
she's
you know
going to be very rich.
You know, it's really interesting. I will say this. I like how Force of the Destiny is supposed to be fun for kids and it's all family friendly. Think back to Empire Strikes Back again. Not the scene with IG-88 and Vader and Boba Fett, but the scene where, in the very beginning, where Han talks about having a death mark on him. He's got a bounty on his head, and they say a death mark is not an easy thing to live with. That's what it is. Like, all three of these characters have, like, bounties on their head, and they kind of make light of it as a joke, especially something aimed at, like, kids and family-friendly. So I do find it a little ironic that, you know, something that's meant to be a little bit more happy, they're treated these bounties on them for being who they are as kind of a joke. Speaking of Forces of Destiny, there's another episode of it called Bounty of Trouble that features Sabine Wren and Princess Leia along with a slew of stormtroopers. And I will say this episode was one that we talked about a long time ago when we talked about Sabine, but I don't think we even mentioned that IG-88 was in it because it's such a kind of a passing moment for him. Even though he's kind of important in it. But the stars really are Sabine and Princess Leia. The premise of this is Princess Leia is set to meet a bounty hunter, a.k.a. Sabine, and pass off a data tape to her. So that way, the Rebels can obviously get Imperial information, since, you know, Princess Leia is undercover as part of the Imperial Senate. Well, as things go, obviously, Leia's with stormtroopers. They start to go after Sabine. Leia kind of, you know, subdues them. But in that whole process, surprise, surprise, a real bounty hunter, IG-88, shows up. And Leia and Sabine have a conversation where Leia says something like, "What is that?" And then Sabine says, "IG-88, an actual bounty hunter and probably interested in your data tape. He's good. One of the best in the galaxy." And he's a surprise. Take cover. Thinking about this, that Sabine refers to IG-88 as one of the best in the galaxy, even though he's foiled very easily, just like kind of in the last episode. It is kind of interesting just to think that he's being used in these shorts to kind of tie two different time periods together, because we know Solo takes place about 10 to 15 years before A New Hope and Rebels. And then, so we saw him with Kira, and now we see him with Leia and Sabine. What do you think about him being a character that kind of ties some of these timelines together?
Well, and that's the benefit of him being a droid, because he doesn't age.
I really like it, because it's really interesting, because we have R2-D2 and C-3PO who've tied all three trilogies together very easily, right? They're in all the trilogies in every episode. And IG-88...
Technically,
BB-8 is, too. Well, BB-8 wasn't in the prequels or in the original trilogy.
No, but I mean, in the sense, he's tying in different components of the Star Wars universe, in the sense that Star Wars Resistance ties back to
the trilogy.
The latest trilogy, because not only did it start off with Poe, but we actually have BB-8 through this, too.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where it comes down to, is like having BB-8 in episodes of Resistance and having Poe in episodes, it links Resistance to the current ones. But I do like that IG-88 is an easy character for them to link to someone like Kira, who's Solo, which is probably about 10 to 15 years, is about 10 years more before Rebels was. And obviously, we know that Ezra and Kanan met Princess Leia in an episode of Rebels. In this, Sabine meets Princess Leia, and IG-88 is still there, and we know that IG-88 is going to be after the end of Return of the Jedi, because he's going to be showing up inside the Mandalorian. So he's going to tie the Star Wars universe together, just like the original droids did. And obviously BB-8 and Poe and the other characters are tying the other media together too. But in the end, Leia and Sabine were able to get away from IG-88 because Sabine surprised them with a paint bomb, just like what she uses on all the TIE fighters in Star Wars Rebels. And IG-88 was covered in purple, and Leia convinced the stormtroopers that he is the bounty hunter that tried to that stole the data tape, and the stormtroopers start to fire at him, and so IG-88 retreats.
Well, and I think it's funny because going back when IG-88 like entered, like kind of showed up in this little episode, like his face, like I'm gonna say face, like the red lights that would be like the front of his head are facing the camera, and you see Sabine and Leia run behind him. And that's what brings in that, like, 180, like, visual sensor, because he whips around and goes after them. But for all of that, when Sabine plants the paint bomb and he comes up to it, he doesn't actually, like, it's almost like he doesn't see it coming. Enter joke here. Because he gets blasted in the face with the paint.
Yeah, you know, it's also like the animation for Forces of Destiny is definitely meant to be it's not like Disney cartoon, like it's definitely meant to be fun.
Yeah,
and he doesn't really see it because he turns his head and stuff like that, and then the explosion happens. So it's just entertaining. But yeah, it is one of those things like. He is made out to be kind of a joke in both episodes of Forces of Destiny, being covered in purple, and then the stormtroopers chasing after him, and he just runs away. It's almost like it's almost Scooby-Doo like, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it's supposed to be like this like comedic relief, whereas the movies are more on like the serious side of things.
Yeah, like it's not like, you know, I love Forces of Destiny. I said I think it's really cool, the animation style. It'll be something that I'll have my daughter watch as she gets a little bit older, but it is definitely something where I wouldn't put it on par to a movie or a book or even a comic. But it is something there. Speaking of comics, it ties us into our last thing I wanted to talk about with Mr. IG-88 is yet another crossover. In the Star Wars universe, IG-88 is hired. Or actually, before I get to this, IG-88 makes an appearance in the new Flight of the Falcon comic book series that debuted last fall. We talked about it. It kind of follows. It's in the comic series Star Wars Adventures, and it follows kind of young Han Solo and the adventures of the Falcon. It's things that have Lando in it and stuff like that. So we talked about this, I think, back like in September. We talked about this comic series coming out. But one of the episodes called Flight of the Falcon has IG-88 in it, being hired by none other than ISB agent Alexander Kallus, which we know Kallus made his original debut in Star Wars Rebels. So I really do like that, you know, this all kind of ties together. That IG-88 was hired by Kallus to hunt down the Imperial Army deserter turned smuggler, Captain Han Solo of the Millennium Falcon. You know, obviously he doesn't capture Han, but, you know, the hijinks ensues. But what do you just think about this? Like, we've seen him talk to someone like Kallus, Leia, Sabine, Kira, and he's going to show up in, you know, Mandalorian.
Well, and the nice thing, like, these like little incidents we're talking about have been animated in some capacity, like one form or another, whereas Mandalorian, like, maybe I'm second guessing myself, but is it not live action?
Yeah, Mandalorian's gonna be live action.
Yeah, so we're gonna get to see him live action.
And I really am excited for Mandalorian and IG-88 being live action too, because IG-88 was known to be a direct competitor to Boba Fett. Like, they were both, mm-hmm. like, the top bounty hunters in the galaxy. And we know the Mandalorian is not Boba Fett, but I wonder if there's going to be some connection to Boba Fett. Like, there has to be. Obviously, we learned a lot more about Mandalorian and Mandalore in both Clone Wars and Rebels, but I have a weird feeling, like, tying in IG-88 into the Mandalorian and some of the other bounty hunters that have been confirmed, that the Mandalorian, even though it's not Boba Fett, may have some type of relation to Boba Fett. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Especially when you think something like Jango Fett was the imprint, was the father of all the clone troopers, right? And then Boba Fett was an unmodified clone of Jango Fett. You know, obviously, I don't think Boba Fett himself was clone, you know, clone of a clone. You know, there's so many jokes about that, but I have a weird feeling that, like, the Mandalorian may not be a kid, may not be, like, a son, but, like, some relation to Boba Fett. It may be even a clone son, like a clone that broke away, and as he did research on who he was or where he came from, finds out, like, where his heritage really lies. So, like, I'm sure it'll be a little convoluted and a little bit more twists and turns, but I'm kind of excited to see how IG-88 and the Mandalorian interact and kind of see where that goes.
Agreed.
So, real quick, some characteristics of IG-88. He is obsessed with hunting, destroying, and killing as a result of his kind of programming. So he has just kind of, you know, earned a reputation of being a merciless hunter. The sensors, like I said, are bright blood red. And so it's one of those things where I'm sure he'll be really scary when we see a live action version of him. He's pretty tall too. He's almost 2 meters tall, which is about 7 feet. Like, he's like as big as Vader, obviously, but super skinny because of the robot form. Kind of like, I bet you he's along the lines of like a K2SO size. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, but unlike K2SO, who was really funny and made us all laugh and cry when he was killed, IG-88 is probably not going to be very funny, unless it's going to be like that dry humor. I can see it, because we've kind of seen him in some of those other roles here. Any thoughts, any last thoughts about IG-88?
No, but, like, meters, like, this is me being pedantic, 1.96 meters is 6.4 feet.
Okay, 6.4 feet. I did it really quick in my head. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. It's just like, because when you said like 2 meters and that was 7 feet, I was like, I'm pretty sure that's like 6 feet. But anyways, I didn't do the calculation. That was just based off memory. So that's why I was like, I'm going to double check it because I'm weird like that.
So what was it? 6'4", you said?
Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's
which
right.
Is still tall.
That's what I said. Like, it wasn't quite 2 meters. Yeah, I was like a meter's like, what, 3.5-ish feet? So probably a little bit less than that, since it wasn't quite 2 meters.
It's still tall.
That's why I said almost 7. I know, still tall, still 6.4, yes. You know, 6.4, 6'4". But yeah, like, I think IG-88 is going to be a fun character to see in The Mandalorian. I wouldn't be surprised to see him along with other bounty hunters pop up in that show, along with Star Wars Land opening. I fully expect to see a Bosk type character, if not Bosk himself, Dengar, maybe Forlom. So, if you don't know who those characters are, maybe we will be talking more about bounty hunters in the future of this show. Anything else, Caitlin?
Yeah, I just want to add, like, I'm looking at the list of armaments and equipment he has, and I wouldn't want to meet him.
Like I said, he's a scary guy.
He's got poison, like, he has toxic gas dispensers. Like, who just, like, carts that around?
Well, someone who doesn't have to breathe, so he can literally just, like, have toxic gas, yeah, and everyone else, like, die, and he just walked through. Because his equipment is acid-proof servo wires, heat sensors, sound sensors, vocoder, which means he's got that really metallic, scary voice, blaster rifles, concussion discs, neural inhibitor, flamethrowers, needle dart gun, poison darts, pulse cannons. Yeah, he's an assassin droid. What do you expect? And he loves to kill.
Which
I would put him on par with like a Dalek, if you will. But maybe not as goofy, but like probably kind of as goofy.
You know, but in the sense exterminate. Of like just the way his head is shaped. With the light and like the need to exterminate, but like he must really have to fight that urge to kill if like the bounty is to bring like that the person has to be alive.
Yeah, you got to remember it's one of those things where I think his design is remnant and piece of what was designed in the 70s and 80s. And what they were able to practically have on set. So I don't think it actually is something that you would see in like, which I will say is kind of sad. Like IG-88's design is something that we probably wouldn't get today in the modern film because it would be done CGI. Not to say that they couldn't make something, but the design of it doesn't quite fit. Like it is it's menacing and it's just kind of opposite of what you would expect. And I feel like we probably wouldn't get a design like him ever again. So IG-88, I salute you. You're a unique bounty hunter and one of the droids who are connecting the series together through multiple media outlets. So thank you,
IG-88. It's always the droids.
It's always the droids, right? All right. Well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. And as always, I'm Mikey B.
And I'm Caitlin.
And may the Force be with you.
And also with you.